Hi everyone, this month we are celebrating the 20th year of the Africa Venture Capital Association annual conference. We are honored and delighted all of us to be participating in that conference as we usually do as practitioners. And I am particularly honored to have with me George Odo, who is a senior partner and head of Eastern and Southern Africa for Africa Invest, also a co-founder of AFCA, right?
EAFCA, but Africa Invest is a co-founder of AFCA.
Absolutely. And EAFCA. Honorary member of EAFCA, it has won an award last year, right? What was the award?
It was most influential personality in East Africa.
Most influential personality in East Africa. I don't think you can get higher than that. And then we have with us the delightful, as always, Lillian Oyando from Goodwill. She's an associate partner at Goodwill Investments, which is a VC fund. So what we're going to talk about today is the investing, venture capital, private equity, the space in Africa, and how that has been influenced in the last 20 years. We are only, me and Lillian can only claim to be nascent in the industry compared to George, but George, we're here to learn and hear from you. So thank you very much for being here. It's an honor.
It's an honor for me too.
Thank you, Lillian.
Thank you for having me as well.
Okay, so George, you started your life in audit. How did that life in audit then transition into investments? Did you imagine what the space would be like and where you are today?
Yeah, you know, it's a long journey. When I think back, I look back almost 30 years. Started my background in finance and audit. I'm trained as an accountant. In fact, I like to tell people I'm a recovered accountant.
What does that mean?
You know, I'm no longer an accountant.
Yeah.
Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm Accountants Anonymous.
I see. Okay.
But started off in accounting, finance. But I quickly realized that that wasn't really a career, it was a tool. And I moved away from accounts, went to audit, moved from audit. And I realized even when I was in audit, I was always curious about what's behind the numbers. So it wasn't just about running the numbers, but what stories are the numbers telling you? So moved. So I've had the privilege of working short stint in the public sector, short stint in the development sector, and then private sector. And when I moved from the public sector, I moved on to work in the insurance industry.
Yeah.
So in the insurance industry, I spent some time, again, a little bit of time in audit, operations, then actually worked for an agribusiness company in the flour sector.
Yeah.
Used to drive up and down between Nairobi and Thika to go to a farm every morning and come back in the evening. Did that for a while, and that was interesting because, again, I was brought in because of my finance skills.
Yeah.
But then quickly pivoted to doing more than that. I was running the operations.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out, you know, why are we making losses? You know, are they post-harvest losses? Are they, which particular flowers goes the highest prices? What stem lengths are relevant? If, you know, going off to the Netherlands to understand where we're selling, going to Germany, going to Switzerland. So I've gone very into the business. Moved from that and went to work with the development agency. I worked with Care International. I spent a good decade of my career with Care International.
Yeah.
And I was the odd guy because I was the guy who's come from the private sector. He's a numbers guy. This is a development agency. But where I was able to work with smallholder farmers and carry the same lessons I had with large farmers, but take it to smallholder farmers, building on economies of scale, connecting them to markets, getting them technical assistance, and working with farmers who are 1 acre, half acre plots and putting them in groups as companies so they're able to benefit from all of these services. And, you know, that was for me the most transformative part of my life because I quickly realized that, there's more to life than just making money. And from there, we had it. We were part of a team that was getting money, soft capital, grants, actually, and were able to invest into companies. So we invested into an agribusiness company in Makueni, eastern part of Kenya, invested in and that company also started working with farmers in the western part of Kenya. We were supplying Nakumat with products. Nakumat, people who are as old as I am will remember Nakumat before it went under. It was there before Naivas, Kiknat.
And Carrefour for that matter.
And Carrefour for that matter, exactly. And then we were, I was working with farmers in, so I started with a Kenyan responsibility, started as a project manager, left as a regional director. So moved from Kenya, working with farmers in Uganda, in Arua, we're exporting sesame to Turkey, working with farmers in Tanzania who are working in the rice industry, working with farmers in Zambia in the sesame side, working with microfinance in Kenya, microfinance in Zambia. So what we're doing, we're actually taking soft patient capital and using it to catalyze businesses, working with SMEs and MSMEs, very small businesses at that time. Our team was then going to be spun off to us to become a separate entity and, you know, become independent. And the organization I work for, Kenya International, had done this in the past. They set up, if you've heard of CEF or CF, Small Enterprise Assistance Fund.
Yeah.
They're operating in South, in Latin America, in Europe, and in Asia. And they've recently come to Africa. So that was a an offshoot of CARE.
Yeah.
MicroVest, which is based in the US. It's a private equity fund that focuses on microfinance, tier one, tier two microfinance institutions. Mm-hmm. That's also an offshoot of CARE. So our team, that time was called CARE Enterprise Partners, was also going to be spun off. So I recall me and my senior colleague, a gentleman called Masoud Sharif, he was a managing partner at Deloitte before he joined me. He was my immediate boss at CARE. We were going to be the two founding partners of that entity. What we found is we had some money from folks like Rockefeller Foundation, from Canadian CEDA and different entities, USAID, etc. But we needed some real capital. And when we went knocking on doors, it was very apparent we needed a little bit more experience and commercial transactions. So we were told, get a big brother to sort of hold your hand. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we quickly did a market scan and we had three people on the shortlist. And I like to tell the story because African Invest was number three. But we ended up going with African Invest because number one didn't work out. We talked to them, met with them. Then number two, when we met with African Invest, the chemistry was very apparent. We talked on phone, they flew to Kenya, I flew to Tunisia, and we realized we could do a lot. This was in 2008. Following year, we set up an operation in Kenya. And the rest is history. Started off with African Invest as managing director for East Africa, wanted to become a partner, then a senior partner. Today, I'm a member of the executive committee of the firm and I'm responsible for not just East Africa, but Eastern and Southern Africa.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And we have a firm of 100 people strong, one of the biggest teams in Africa, 60 investment officers, 10 offices globally, 8 of them are in Africa, and Nairobi office, which I head, is the second largest.
Wow.
So yeah, it's been quite a journey, so moving from an accountant to using numbers as a tool.
But what you're telling me, basically, is that it is a happy accident because it was a numbers game. Ben working with smallholder farmers who really needed grants and understood the realities of getting money in order to grow your business, and then now doing the investments yourself. So it's a happy accident.
I wouldn't say accidentally because I don't know how to say this without sounding conceited, but I try to get what I want. When I see something, I go for it and I really push. And it was really clear in my mind that I was not the kind of person who sits in the office, you know, wearing a tie, 9-to-5 job. You know, I wanted to go out and make things happen. Businesses work. And for me, it was about making money. In fact, there's a joke that goes around when people ask, are you sure you're from the right part of the country, George? People with those tendencies come from another, the more entrepreneurial side of Kenya.
Do they look like me?
Yes. So the thing is, I was very clear in my mind that I wanted to work with businesses, wanted to work with business people.
Mm-hmm.
And my operational experience helped, my training background helped because I did finance, BCom, CPA, MBA. So very strong finance and partnerships. My partnerships training was my most valuable training.
So qualifications, opportunity, meeting, preparation at the same time.
And passion. Yeah. I think that's it. I mean, I'm one of those people who get up early in the morning. I used to wake up at 5. I'm getting older now. It's 5:30.
Wow. But well, you wake up at 6. So I
do this without my alarm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's something I've done and I keep in sort of a discipline. And I think in part it comes from the school I went to. I went to one of these schools which was well known for discipline.
Which one?
Stanley Boys.
Okay.
Back in the day.
Okay, the cameraman is saying that he also went there. So
yeah.
Yeah.
My final number was 6105.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Exactly.
Okay. All the Sarah boys stand up. Libby, let's get to you. Okay,
yeah.
So I tried my best to scour the internet for information, then literally nothing.
Mm.
How did you come to get to Goodwill Investments?
Yeah, wow. So for me, I was very clear from the beginning that I wanted to work with money,
yeah,
or in money.
So both of you, money first.
Yeah, but I just didn't know which part.
Yeah.
Was it going to be a bank teller? Was it going to be in
bank teller?
Yeah, because I looked at all the different careers and I was like, where do I want to
go?
So my journey started as a research analyst in Johannesburg at an investment company. They used to do corporate finance and also stock broking.
Mm-hmm.
So the two worlds, yeah, listed companies and non-listed companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to have an experience of both and investing in both and what are the mechanics of investing in both. And then after that, I decided, okay, I want to see more on the private side. How does that work? And so I moved to a private equity fund that invested in microfinance institutions across sub-Saharan Africa. I'm not going to say the name, but I've signed it here. And all of that stuff. They had already invested in about 14 opportunities across sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So some Cameroon, in Tanzania, in Mozambique. And I had the opportunity to be there during mostly the exit phase.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very, very interesting. Learning from the end.
Yeah. So it had happened at the end.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so because now you had to do secondary sales, you had to do management buyouts and stuff like that.
Okay.
So my career in the investment space started at the end.
Okay.
Most people, it starts at the beginning.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was there for about 3.5 years. We managed to offload some of those assets. And then I moved to another transaction advisor, and they did investments, on-grid investments and advisory.
Okay.
Advisory in power and energy in South Africa. All of this is all in South Africa. And I was with them for about 3 years, and we used to do big mega projects, because at that time is when the issue of load shedding had started.
Okay.
So the focus then was on IPPs, which now is RIPPPs, a couple of PPs.
Yeah.
And so we used to bring together a consortium of people, investors from Japan, from China, and local teams on the ground.
Yeah.
And then we would bid for big projects, right? On-grid projects like 5 megawatts and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really, really good experience, eh?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite story comes from there, from Georgetown in Western Cape. But we'll get to that point.
Okay.
And then from there, I decided I've never worked in Kenya before. So I said, I would like to know how it is as an adult to work back home. And so I started scouting to look at opportunities. And then I found an opportunity at a German big company, asset management company, Deutsche Bank. And they had a sustainable desk, and the asset management desk that they were looking at. And they had a private credit fund that looked at businesses in the agriculture space.
Yeah.
So now you see I moved from finance, now I'm getting into the agriculture space, and now I'm getting into senior lending space.
Yeah.
So I was there for, again, a couple of years, did have quite a few opportunities across East and South Africa. I remember going to Zimbabwe for a due diligence. That was really good, at the Hippo Valley.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the views must have been beautiful, but the DD, I'm not sure.
It was interesting. I think that was the first time I really got to do a DD where you see a business that has the outgrower scheme and the nuclear scheme. So they themselves have thousands of acres of plantations of what they're producing, and then they have the outgrowers, and you get to meet the smallholder farmers who are working with them. So that was really a game changer for me. I got to see things on a large scale. I'm talking a couple of hundreds of millions. So that was, different. And so I worked there for some time, and then I decided I wanted to go and do my master's. So I did my master's at Oxford. And then I said, okay, now I want to understand how operations work in an SME, right? I wanted to be very clear and have that insider kind of knowledge. Every time I'm approaching a founder or a promoter, I'm very clear on what the CFO is doing exactly, what the CEO, what is management doing, just having that insider information. So I went to work for a startup.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they were, and there I was the finance and fundraising director for their pre-series A.
Yeah.
Right? So it was also a very, very unique time for me, because now I'm the finance manager, so I have to do the payroll, I have to make sure the accounts are right. So my degree, which is in financial management, had a combination of accounting and investments. Mm-hmm. So lucky for me, I had that accounting background, mm-hmm. so I knew, okay, payroll, trial balance. So it was a lot of work. So big ups and thumbs up to CFO and finance managers. Nice. It's a lot of work. And at the same time, I was also helping them to fundraise.
Yeah.
So building their model, and coming from the investment side, I knew what the investor wants to look at. So I was really tailoring things to speak to and what, you know, answer questions before they ask.
Yeah, I mean, that experience is invaluable now at Goodwill, because you're the investor looking at the business itself.
Exactly. So after I had done the pre-series A and closed and good, then I moved to Goodwill. Yeah. And so here at Goodwill, I am associate partner and regional head for East Africa. And my role there is to, you know, all the way from origination, manage the team, you know, portfolio management. And why I chose Goodwill, I was looking at a couple of different opportunities at the time. And I was with Child.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in their job advert, they said that we do not discriminate. And they wrote a couple of things, race, age, blah, 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 and then they wrote pregnancy.
Okay.
I was very shocked. I had never seen that before.
Which is not something that many employers would.
Yeah. I was very shocked. Yeah. So I was like, okay, let me test this.
Yeah.
And so I applied.
Okay.
And here we are today.
Amazing. I mean, so they really they stood by their word and they didn't discriminate.
Yes.
So
that's, and they waited all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Okay, excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's go to you, George. When you then started Africa Invest, and you now have an office in Nairobi, you've partnered with these Tunisians. What was the experience like from that beginning to today?
No, I mean, it was amazing. You know, like I said to you, when we were looking for a partner to spin off, to help us spin off our own GP back in the day, we're looking for certain traits. We're looking for people who are technically skilled. We're looking for the chemistry. We're looking for people who would be able to help us fundraise.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found all of those. We ticked all those boxes with my colleagues. And I must say that we didn't set up our own GP. We ended up setting up a Tunisian, an African Invest. That time it was called Tune Invested in that part of the world. But in this part of the world, we refer to it as African Invest.
Yeah.
And we rebranded. You know, we used to have Morocco Invest, we used to have Tune Invest, now it's just Africa Invest
yeah,
World.
Yeah.
But the thing that I found most valuable about my colleagues is what you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, any Kenyan can relate with that, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, straight talking, and they're very supportive. And I recall the structure when we started off, because we're opening offices all over Sub-Saharan Africa. We opened an office in Abidjan for our French-speaking business in Francophone West Africa. We opened an office in Lagos for Anglophone business in West Africa. Nairobi was at that time East Africa. There was a lot of very strong support from the head office.
Yeah.
They helped to train us, and our training entailed going to spend some time in the head office.
Yeah.
But also some of our colleagues coming and spending time with us. When we're going through deals, we're working on deals together. It was very much, if you like, a partnership of equals.
Yeah.
And very supportive. So that was cool. And I think the other thing that's very interesting about Africa Invest is we have 22 different nationalities. And I say this because people sometimes think Africa Invest think Tunisian.
Yeah.
Africa Invest has 22 different nationalities. You can't get a more diverse team. Mm-hmm. 46% of our team are women. So wow. It's one of the biggest women complement in the industry.
Yeah.
23% of our leadership are women. So
amazing.
Diversity is big for us.
Amazing. So also standing behind their name. What I wanted to get to actually is the type of investments, actually the sophistication of the deals that you could
yeah.
see at the time
yeah.
And what you were seeing in terms of what kind of business can I enter into?
Yeah.
Am I willing to take a risk? Very different from, for example, a Goodwill where they're actually taking risk by being venture capitalists, right?
Yeah.
So talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah, so private equity is a little different, you know. So private equity, you have to have some track record of results, financial performance. because that's what you're selling. You also, so we look at the financials, you know, so how strong, how stable is that business? What's the growth perspective? Because you're not just buying the history. And very often you hear that, you know, performance of the past is no indication of the future, but it gives you a good sense of track record. So you buy into a business plan going forward. It's very important that you have a strong management team. So look at management teams. So you look at the owners of the business. You know, in a business, you do business with people. If you have a good relationship, you can fix things even when times are tough. Mm. If you have a bad relationship, you can destroy a good business. Mm. So relationships are important. So it's important the people we sit across and do business with are credible people. Integrity is really big for us. The other thing we also have been able to benefit from is we've done about close to 130 exits in the continent. I don't think there are very many other managers who can claim to have done as many exits. And probably outside of South Africa, and even if you look at South African managers, we are close to the top in terms of number of exits. And we've done everything from promoter buybacks or put options to listings to strategic sales, strain sales for minority, majority, to self-liquidating instruments, whether they be convertible bonds or redeemable preference shares, redeemable convertible preference shares. We've done all sorts of structures. And that was something that we really appreciated, you know, certainly from my own personal perspective, and I see it with a lot of the younger team members, the ability to learn from the many different structures that the team has done. My colleague, Skanda, who is our chief investment officer, we started the Kenya office with him. The one thing that, you know, I've always appreciated about him is, you know, he's got a mind that works like magic. When it comes to structuring, he can structure his way out of anything. and I can understand why he worked in structured finance in IFC, but he's carried it along. He's got a mind that works like the engineer he is. Mm. And that's one thing. That's a good representation of African Invest. Whether you're talking to Aziz, one of the founding partners, or Ziad, you always get solutions, so very solution-oriented. And that has helped us to do quite a number of transactions. Education in this area, we've done, you know, we invested in Brookhouse International School, sold that off to a very strong strategic operator, very successful. We invested in Abacus Pharmaceuticals in Uganda, sold that off to Carlyle, who are one of the largest PE players in the world. We've done insurance. We invested in UAP, sold that to Old Mutual. Invested in Family Bank, sold that stake to Kenya Tea Development Agency and Lab Trust. We've invested in a number of companies, and I think what helped us is what we've been able to demonstrate that it's possible to do good deals in this market. You do a deal, source for the deal, build that transaction, and exit.
Yes.
And realize returns, not just for ourselves and our investors, but also for our local partners.
Yeah. And actually, what I wanted to get to is actually the type of companies that were in existence and understanding what your requirements are. Mm-hmm. Was it very difficult to persuade them to take the money or to form structures around what your expectations were for them? Mm-hmm. Or is it much easier? It must be much easier now because people understand private equity and also understand that those kind of, you know, what the requirements are, right?
Yeah, very good point, Jerry. Actually, back in the day, not only were you trying to show the value, convince your partners of the value, but you also had to explain to them. So you spent half the time explaining what private equity is and how it works. Mm-hmm. And then even when you're drawing up legal documents, because you must have airtight legal docs, you have to explain to them and you have to be fair.
Yeah.
And you know what we said? It's sometimes it's not about negotiating what's best for you. It's what's good for both sides, a win-win. Because even if you get a good deal over your partner today, if they find out it leaves a bad taste and it destroys the relationship.
Correct.
So better to be fair. Mm-hmm. Fair terms rather than terms which are favorable to one side.
Yeah.
And I remember we even did one transaction where, of course I can't name the names, but the counterparties were so unsophisticated. And even when they brought their lawyer had never done a private equity transaction before.
I mean, they saw some today.
Yes. But we made sure we walked them through every clause. Mm-hmm. We told them. So we were literally transaction advising in a deal, negotiating ourselves.
Correct.
But making sure that they were comfortable with what we were proposing. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the best relationships we've ever had.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. And for you, of course, you're looking at companies who are startups, who are just at the beginning. They don't have the structures in place, but you're willing to take the risk on them. Why is that? And how does VC work in that way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for us, we kind of look at in the middle, so not really, really startups per se. Mm-hmm. I am a firm believer, and Goodwill is a firm believer, that every investor plays an important role in the value chain. They are those who are pre-seed ideation stage. Those are the ones, you know, they help to really de-risk opportunities at that point. And then there's a VC. It's supposed to be a seed, but often it comes, I would say, a Series A,
Series A
around that side. So what we do, and I think for the PE sector especially, is to de-risk the opportunity and to really prepare it for the growth stage. So lots of value addition activities. At Goodwill, we are very hands-on investors, so we do take like board seats, so that we can be part of decision making, strategy, guidance, and all of that. So what I think, how does that work, is we look at opportunities that are for Goodwill starting to or giving what you would say goods and services, affordable goods and services to the base of the pyramid.
Yeah.
So because when you look at Africa, there are so many problems and solutions that we are trying to solve, problems that we try to solve with different solutions. And what we look at is opportunities that are providing that kind of sustainable development across the different parts of sub-Saharan Africa. So how does that work for the VC side? We have different instruments that are tailored for that. We have got the mezz debt instrument. We've got, of course, the equity. And under the mezz debt, we've got also convertible notes.
Correct.
So we try to look at opportunities that we feel, okay, have integrity, like George mentioned. So the team is super, super important for us. But also most important, the product market fit. So the customers are voting by usage, right? It actually is solving the problem that's there. And then we say, okay, we see that, for example, if it's providing affordable housing, that's an example, but Goodwill doesn't do infrastructure. Maybe use another example, like providing goods, e-commerce in the rural areas. Then we'd say, okay, it's addressing a problem. They don't have access to options, or they don't have access to affordable goods and services that others have in the urban areas. So that's how we would look at things.
And now that you see, VC is like the hot property topic. Everyone wants to be in VC. In fact, PE is, you know, you looked at the older, bigger brother, and you've grown up, you know, you've paid your school fees. VC is now in the thick of it. How do you square the two? Are you looking at VC opportunities? Are you willing to be more flexible in terms of where the business is at the point of investment? You are solving a particular, you know, segment of the market. What is your focus? And also, I just want to know from a regional perspective, what are you seeing? Because Kenya is the most popular for investment transactions. Is that a trend that is set to continue? Let's deal with the
PE first. So I'll tell you, one of the things, when we started our trade 30 years ago, we're going to be 30 years old this year. So we are the old guys at African Invest. We're actually going to be celebrating our 30th anniversary. And what we tend to do as a team is every year we go away and we have team building events and we have investor meetings. This year, the team's coming to Kenya. So we're hosting the annual team building and the annual investor meetings in Kenya this year. Very excited about that because it's our 30th anniversary.
I mean, that is a big milestone.
It's a big milestone.
And a lot of work and a lot of transactions and a lot of investments.
It has. I mean, maybe we should take time off and reflect. But I think we like to think that we've contributed to building the industry. But when we think about when we started off 1994, we were primarily a PE shop. Today, we have private equity. We actually describe ourselves as an investment platform today.
Okay.
That's our approach. We have private equity, we have private credit, we have venture capital. We have sector-specific funds for the health sector, for the financial sector. We have cross-border funds. We have a strong partnership with the French government through BPI France, where we've done French Africa Fund 1, French Africa Fund 2, and it'll be the market for French Africa Fund 3 next year. So we've got different products. In Dubai, we have an office. The Dubai office focuses on listed equities. So if you look, we actually on investment platform with different products. So investors can actually say, I'm interested in VC, and I'm interested in your mid-cap PE. I'm not interested in the other product.
Okay.
And similarly, clients can come and say, and we have this conversation with them, what's the ideal solution for you? you don't need private equity. You actually need VC.
Okay.
So you can, basically align the solutions to the most appropriate solutions with the client's needs.
I mean, that is a high level of sophistication, which I don't think many people can compare to, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're hoping to get to.
And I'll tell you, before you come in, the truth of the matter is when we started to do this, we got a lot of resistance from the market.
Yeah.
The LPs, the limited partners, the investors were saying, no, you guys are doing too many things. You know, you should stick to knitting, you know.
Stick to knitting.
Yeah, then it was foresight from our founders. They saw it, they looked ahead, and we're seeing a lot of our competitors following that model. They're all beginning to take up VC, they're beginning to take up, cross-border funds, they're doing private credit, stuff which we already
Because did. They need to be flexible enough to adapt to what the market is.
And when you have a big team, then you can have a strong mid-office. So I mentioned 100 people, 60 of us are investment officers, but then the other 40 are mid-office and back-office, very important part of the team.
Yeah.
So you can have your own ESG team, impact sustainability team, you can have your own in-house legal team, you can have your own, you can develop strong back office and mid office, accounting, fund management, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped.
Yeah, and for you, everyone wants you now. Everyone is talking to you, they're like, this VC fund is the one I want to work with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for us, our strategy has been first focusing on the equity funds that we have.
Yeah.
We've got two, focusing on Sub-Saharan Africa. One is fully invested. The other one we are fundraising and also investing at the same time. We did our first close recently. But our strategy is to, of course, have more funds.
Yeah.
And what we've done recently is we've also launched a fund. We launched it. You came for the launch. Right, for our Mezz Debt Fund.
I emceed the launch.
Yes, you emceed. Thank you. So we have our Mezz Debt Fund, and that one is very much like the others, but this one is very much driven by the demand.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, okay, what are we seeing that's missing in the market or there should be more of? And so we decided to customize this fund in that way with the partner that we have right now. And this fund focuses on the nexus between climate and gender lens, mm-hmm. something we've not seen a lot of in the market. And so we said, okay, why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And we said we needed instruments that are patient. So really giving people enough time to put the capital we give them to work, right? And so you see Mezz Debt has that kind of structure because you've got the grace period. And we also wanted instruments that are inclusive, right? So this fund, we don't really take assets as collateral. We've got other types of securities like the pledge and shares, but the collateral itself, which you often see is a hindrance when you're going to get funding from commercial banks. So we said, okay, this is what we see is needed in the market, right?
Yeah.
And so we were going in the need kind of demand way. And so we set up this fund with our partner for that particular reason.
I mean, there's so many things that I can think about just from what you guys are saying. Mm-hmm. Because what it is a mixture between wanting a return from a business that has proven itself and is able to demonstrate its capabilities, and then also wanting to contribute in a way that adds value, right? And so what Lillian is talking about is saying we're going to focus on climate and gender because these are underrepresented areas, and then we can actually contribute there. How do you marry the want to make the money and to really be successful in terms of returns for your investors, and then also the need to contribute to the growth of Africa?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still coming back on the regional, but let's talk about that a bit.
I think that's a fundamental challenge in this market, and this market being Africa. Companies in Africa, opportunities in Africa, business in Africa have got huge growth trajectory potential.
Mm.
The challenge is Africa's fraught with risks. You know, if you're not talking about governance risks, you're talking about poor infrastructure. You're not talking about that. You're talking about conflict. You're talking about that. You're talking about, so one issue after the other.
Mm.
Today, the cost of borrowing in our markets today, you know, the CBR, central bank rate, is 13%. If you're a good client, the bank will lend you at 20%. It's outrageous.
Mm.
But when I speak to my colleague Abiola in Nigeria, she thinks that's a steal because they're borrowing at 26, 27, 28%, you know?
Sure.
So African markets have challenges. When I look at my colleagues in Europe, they're borrowing at 4%.
Mm.
So there's always going to be a challenge to provide a return. And that's why I always find it's not comparing apples and apples when you see people saying that, you know, when you, and this is a conversation we have continuously with asset allocators when they say, oh, we're not going to get the same IRR as we're getting in Latin America, in Asia, in Europe. It's not comparing apples with apples.
Yeah.
To come to Africa, one, you're going to get a return, but then it's not just a commercial return, you'll get an impact return.
Yeah.
So you have to be alive to that, that you might have a slightly lower commercial return, but you're going to get an impact return. And that has a big multiplier effect.
And can people eat impact?
You know what it is? People are realizing that impact is important for sustainability.
Yeah.
So we can eat commercial returns for a short term. But if we're doing well and our neighbors are not doing well, that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
So you must think of business models that can reach the low income, can reach the mass markets. Mm. It may mean that you're making a low return. And today you can use technology. You know, you're talking about gender and climate. You're going to find you're looking at a lot of models, Lillian, that have technology. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how you get your reach. That's how you reduce your cost of service delivery. Mm-hmm. So returns in Africa are a challenge. I remember a few years ago, pre-COVID, we were firing at four pistons and we're in the top quartile, a lot of our funds. However, COVID...
This was a lot of funds in Africa overall.
And so when we compared to the other funds in Africa, okay. We're definitely mm-hmm. top quartile. But we took a hit during COVID.
Yeah.
You know, I think we used to return 2.5 times money back to our investors. It's gone down to 2.3 times. Because of COVID, we're seeing delayed exits.
Yes.
You know, and we're also seeing impact on IRR, impact on carry. How do you keep the managers incentivized?
Incentivized, yeah.
And this is why investors must think a little bit bigger picture. They can't be transactional. They've got to be relational. They've got to recognize that there are some tough times. How do you normalize that? How do you continue to look at long-term returns? So the returns conversation is a whole discussion.
Yeah.
But an important one. And, you know, and this is important, Jerry, because even when we go looking for businesses, I remember back in the day, we used to tell people 3 times money. If I'm not making 3 times money.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's a standard we held for ourselves.
Gosh.
Then we realized that that's not going to be the norm in Africa. You mm-hmm. will get some of those 3x, and sometimes you'll do better, but sometimes you'll do 2x. Sometimes you'll do 1.5x, and there's nothing wrong with that because you're looking at the return in the entire fund.
And the impact may be bigger.
Impact may be bigger.
Yeah, but impact is a word that people throw around a lot, and especially on the VC side, it's all mm-hmm. impact. I think what's interesting, Lillian, and maybe what you can talk about, is the ways in which maybe you don't get the return and you incentivize impact in a way that, you know, they make sure that they're working towards a return, and so not in a punitive way. Does that make sense? When we're looking at the transaction documents, for example?
Yeah, like having ESG covenants and that kind of
correct.
Stuff. Okay, so really trying to guide from the investments phase towards the social impact or the ESG that you're trying to get for the fund.
Or right? Even the way in which you can structure, so if it's a convertible, you can have the option to convert, obviously, automatically, but you can give leeway depending on how the business is succeeding so that you're not automatically being punitive to them.
Yeah. There are different ways of doing that. And I think one of them is, for example, if you have an interest rate or a coupon that's, just an example, 12%, and you say that if you meet this ESG or impact goals, we shall reduce that by this. So that's an incentive for them to actually work towards those particular milestones that you have in place.
Mm-hmm.
I think another way that we do it at Goodwill is we have, from the beginning, when we are doing the whole investment process, we have the ESG DD impact, ESG and impact due diligence as part of the commercial due diligence. And at that phase, we have in-depth conversations with the promoters and put together what we call an ESG action plan, which then some of them, they've never even heard of this. So we are kind of introducing something that they've seen before. And so we kind of go into depth in with the different parts of those the ESG that we're trying to make sure that they follow.
Yeah.
And then we have the plan, which then we will be monitoring and following with them for as long as we are investors in them. And even post that, right, mm-hmm. we put measurements in place. But it is something big, and it is something that we embed from the beginning. However, That said, when we are looking at businesses, we look at businesses that already have impact embedded in them. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that, when you look at Africa, we generally come from a very low base in terms of most of these things. So even just having a job in itself is creating jobs, right? That's a social impact. But then there's the intentionality, which I'm mentioning, mm-hmm. of us, ourselves, then saying, okay, we see these are the areas that you need to work on. Yeah. We want to work with you on them, and we're going to have the ESG committee in place to at the board level, or even have an ESG advisor as part of the ESG committee.
I mean, that makes sure that those principles are not just annexures to a document. Yes. They're actually fundamental to the running of the business going forward when you're in investment.
And you know what, Jerry, mm-hmm. and Lillian, one thing that's important is, you know, what Lillian has described is very important, to be able to structure your impact objectives in your documents, in your business, etc.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether you've seen this, and you probably have, probably preaching to the church choir here, is when sponsors, managers, owners start to do it, not because it's a compliance yes. requirement in the legal documents, but because they see the value and they see the intrinsic link to their own sustainability. I think that's the optimum. So when you exit a company and you see they're still doing the good practices and they've even taken it to the next level, I don't know that you've seen that, but we've seen some cases which are very impressive. So they completely embrace it.
Yeah, no. And hence I said, we look at opportunities that already have impact embedded in them. Mm-hmm. So most of the founders, even though they didn't have the structure in place, they already had that
mindset
of, exactly. I definitely want to do good while doing well. Mm-hmm. Hence the name Goodwill.
Oh, hey. Okay. Doing good while not doing well. I like it. Okay, fine. So let's talk about the decision on the type of investments between debt and equity. And I know that we've talked about mezzanine debt, which is a hybrid. How do you decide which is best for the type of business that you're investing in?
Mm. I mean, the classical way to do this is, first of all, you don't want to invest in a business that's over-leveraged, too much debt, to choke the company.
Yeah.
So you must make sure there's adequate capital in that business in terms of equity. The other thing you also want to do is, sometimes when we invest in businesses, we do a bit of financial engineering. We look to see whether their debt is well-priced, well-structured. Are they using short-term money to finance long-term needs? Because that's a classical mistake entrepreneurs do.
Yeah.
So we try to help them structure their balance sheet, right? We try to help them source for longer term money if they're looking for long term money. Maybe the commercial banks are offering 5 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get one of our investors to give a 10-year, 8-year, 7-year at easier terms. So we try to help with that. But when you decide whether it's debt or equity, it also depends on industry to industry. You know, there are ratios you follow.
Yeah.
But typically, rule of the thumb is you don't want to, especially when you're looking at schools, hospitals, which are giving social services, you don't want to put too much leverage. It's not like a manufacturing plant.
Understood. The reason I'm coming to that decision between debt versus equity is exactly what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You as a private equity or venture capital, you're supposed to be assisting in the growth of the company, but not necessarily being part of the company, right? But there is a criticism mm-hmm. of private equity and perhaps venture capital in wanting to be involved in the management, the day-to-day, having mm-hmm. a board seat on the business, when all you've done is given them money, like a bank would. So what is the justification for that? How do you rebut that?
Okay, no, that's a good question. So we are very hands-on. We definitely take both board seats and board observer seats, right?
Yeah.
And part of our strategy is we are big on value addition. And so we have a whole bouquet of offerings that we look at when we're looking at value addition. And one of them is the ESG that I spoke about. So whenever we're looking at a company, we want to come in and see, do you have a framework? Is this something that you're working on? Can we assist? So with our board seats, we're always looking at things from the angle of, can we assist you? Sometimes there is no board, right? And so we are coming to set up a board. And I think PE will agree with me when I say that the value of a company does slightly improve when they have a governance structure in place. So here we are, we've taken a board seat, which we are forming the board together with you, putting together the charters and the committees. Committees are super important, right? Because then if we have a finance and audit committee, we have visibility into your cash management and your liquidity planning. And so we can be able to also say, okay, we need Africinvest to come in. with their debt, right, to be able to give that long-term capital or debt capital that we need. So we want that kind of visibility from an angle of helping and assisting the company to get to that stage that we can hand it over to the next investor.
Yeah.
And for it to be sustainable as well. So the board city is not to come and try and helicopter and, you know, micromanage. It really is from a value addition angle.
Okay. How do you, George, add to that? But yeah. Also, can you comment on, and you can especially, when we are looking at documentation, so for example, the investment docs and the ESG plan and, you know, whatever governance you want, how do you make sure that it's African? Because you're African Invest, you're not European Invest. Mm-hmm. Are you bringing in African standards that work an African business? Yeah.
No, we're very cognizant of that. You know, and having done deals in about 35 African countries, we can claim to know Africa. You know, we know what works and what doesn't work. And we've burnt our fingers a few times. It hasn't been on a honky-dory party. We've burnt our fingers a few times and we've learned from that. So when it comes to legal documentation, we try to make sure it's relevant. We try to make sure that any covenants we're bringing in are localized, contextualized, and if there are higher standards outside of our market, those can be aspirational.
Okay.
But it's important, you know, for example, there's some things which are you can't compromise. So child labor is child labor, no matter where. So
agreed.
You'd have those embedded, so some things which you don't compromise, but there's some areas where you may say, yes, we don't have this level of development in our continent. And you have to then, again, customize, contextualize. That's important. But also just to add on to the early conversation that you're having with Lillian around board seats, too active in companies, we are very clear from the get-go. If you're just looking for money, we are the wrong people. Because there's lots of money available out there. Go to a bank, go to a financial investor, because that's not us. We are a hands-on investor, very much like Goodwill. And one of my founding partners, when I joined the firm, said to me that, George, we are a white collar firm with a blue collar attitude.
Okay.
So we roll up our sleeves and we dive in. You know, so we get involved in management level. We speak to management. I can't even tell you how many times I've spoken to management of a couple of portfolio companies today, same thing with yesterday. We speak to board members, same thing. We speak to shareholders. So we have a conversation at the three levels. Shareholders to make decisions, board members for governance, and management to execute. And we have those conversations.
All day, every day. In fact, let's move on to that. Because you've made your investment. You are now part of the board. You have a responsibility to return, to make a return for your investors. How are you managing your day-to-day? Because a lot of people know and they understand that private equity, venture capital are high-level, high-stress jobs with a lot of requirements, yeah? Mm. Especially for Lillian as a woman and, you know, at a very senior level, there are not many women in that in that position. Let's talk about how you manage your day-to-day after you've given out that fat check.
It's a team thing.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the most important lessons I've learned over the years is it's important to have very, very competent team around you, people who are smarter than you, people who are more capable than you. You learn from each other. So surrounding yourself with competent people, people with the same values, you know, working hard, taking responsibility, that's important because it is a high-stress job. And it's everything from the deal sourcing to the preliminary analysis when you find the companies, to the structuring of the deals, to the due diligence and the final structuring and speaking to IC in between, making the investment happen after all the regulatory approvals and getting all the legal docs in place, and then managing that investment. You know, there's a relationship going on.
Oh, and continuing relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And building the business so that you can exit at a higher multiple. So it is a high-stress job, but in between fundraising, deal sourcing, and analyzing businesses, adding value, let's just say you need about 30 hours a day.
Gosh, and I can imagine that you put in those hours. Lillian, how do you manage it?
I completely agree with George. It definitely is a team effort. So on the professional side, for me, is different people play a different part in the whole management of the portfolio. Okay. And we have those who are originating. We have those who are executing. Sometimes they overlap. And, you know, it's never one person looking at one deal. At any given time, a promoter knows that they can call me or they can call the investment manager and they will get the same answer or they will get the same kind of response. So everything is very team effort for us. I always say if we're only thriving, if we're all thriving, right?
Yeah.
So without that team effort, then I think it would be even an even more stressful job, because then you have everything on your plate. You're trying to speak to co-investors.
Yeah.
You're trying to speak to shareholders, to the board members, to management. You're trying to, you know, it's a lot of work. On the other side, as you mentioned, as a woman, especially as a mom, it's the support structure as well, right? Really having in place people who can be there with your family, with your kids when you take a trip to go to an in-person board meeting. It's the support. It really is a team and the support.
Yes.
Because they have to be very patient also sometimes.
Exactly.
With all the travel and all the late hours.
Yes.
But then, you know, we work hard, Gary, but we also play hard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about the players, Judge. Tell us about the play.
I think we might need a whole different podcast for that.
Okay. Thank you for that. I wanted to get to the future. So, 20 years of AFCA, 20 years of actually seriously looking at where investments are going, having continuous discussions about investing in Africa. What are the highlights for you? What has been that? First of all, can you tell us a deal that has been the highlight for you since you started, and the highlight in the last 20 years?
Mm-hmm. I'll come to the deal last. So let me start with the highlight, what I've seen and where I think we're going. And I'll tell you a very quick story about the deal. We, as African Invest, are founding members of AFCA. We are also founding members of what used to be called the Emerging Markets Private Equity Association, now called Wubil Private Capital Association. We're founding members of East Africa Venture Capital and Private Equity Association. We really value industry associations because it's not about George or about African Invest or about, you know, my colleagues. It's about the industry. And so we want to carry everybody along. So when we have want to speak to policymakers, we want to speak to other industries, we give our industry a voice.
Yeah.
So industry associations are important from that perspective. And AFCA's come a long way. I remember when we came to this market the first time and AFCA was moving its office from Cameroon. They came to Nairobi shortly, and I hosted them in my office before they relocated to London and for strategic reasons. But industry associations are very important. We've seen more players come up, more GPs come up. When we started East Africa Venture Capital Association, there were six of us. I remember James Moria, Centum, Michael Turner, Actis, Paul Kavuma, Catalyst, Fanisi, Aisi Makatiani. There was Eline. And there was myself, and I'm forgetting somebody, Davinder Sikand, and Abraj, and Peter Njoka. So those were sort of the founders. And then eventually we passed on the baton to others. My colleague Faisal sits on the board now. I'm no longer in the board. But we've seen the industry grow. We've seen more players come.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of the next generation. It's time, maybe we'll start to build capacity to start to hand over. But we've seen the industry grow in terms of numbers of people, more awareness of private equity. We've seen private capital coming to private equity. When we started off, we were primarily a DFI-funded equity player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Today, the number of DFI and commercial investors are almost one-to-one. In fact, commercial players may even be more.
Yeah.
In terms of capital, DFI still fund more because, again, it's
the volume.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we've seen not just players, we've also seen the LP universe, the investor universe, change. We've seen more private capital pension funds. I'm particularly proud of how Kenyan pension funds have reacted and come to the party, beginning to understand the value of alternatives. We've also seen a lot of new products, and you will attest to this, Lillian. You know, initially people just used to talk about private equity and venture capital. So there's private credit, there are MES products. There's different types of specialist funds. There are country-specific funds, there are regional funds.
Yeah.
And there's value in the region, you alluded to it, because it helps you to de-risk your investments. It's not a single country risk you're taking. You're taking multi-country risk. So if one country this year, Kenya, has elections, we all get, it's like we've seen, you know, a werewolf seeing a moon. We have our werewolf moment.
Yeah.
Then, you know, so the economy slows down. But if you have a business that's in Uganda, Tanzania, Zambia, then you're able to de-risk.
Yeah.
Then following year, it's another country. Mm. So regional businesses have that advantage. But they also give you scale. When you're exiting, buyers are looking for scale. Mm. And as much as we think we are big in the larger markets, we're Mickey Mouse players. So when you get skill from regional diversification.
Yeah.
So that has worked well. So we've seen regional transactions happening. We've seen, I would say 20 years ago, private equity was in North Africa, a little bit of West Africa.
And then South Africa.
And South Africa, very much so. Mm-hmm. Today, it's in the entire continent. Mm-hmm. It'll be great that we're going back to South Africa next week for our 20th anniversary as AFCA, Africa Venture Capital and Private Equity Association. It would be good to go back to where private equity was most dominant. But it's just going to be great to see, the hundreds of people playing in the industry.
Yeah.
I mean, so the industry has really come to the party and it's grown. And then the ability to influence policy, I think that's extremely powerful. Mm-hmm. Being able to go and speak to a treasury secretary, to a central bank governor, in the different markets. We do it, others do it as investors. So my day job is not just doing transactions. I have to be able to know who the policymakers and have conversations with them. And not at Africa Invest level, also, but at industry level.
Mm.
Now, that's extremely powerful. And so when I look at the industry today and where it was when I joined Africa Invest 16 years ago, I mean, we've come a long way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because I feel like I've only just joined. And, you know, because I'm a young lawyer, younger lawyer.
You're a young lawyer.
So it's really great to see. And also, every time I've attended AFCA, is to get to understand businesses. And we are working with them and then saying, we've done these deals. Now let's push to the next frontier. And I think that is something that we can't buy. What is
I think the one thing that I'd like to see more of, I'd like to see us, yes, we've done well, even in terms of products, more products, but I think there's still some gaps in the market.
Okay.
And we spoke about one of them earlier offline, where we said, you know, we need to have products such as secondaries, more secondary transactions happening. When we first started to sell assets from one private equity company to another, people scorned upon it. But people now realize actually that's a credible exit avenue. And today when you're sitting and thinking about what are your exit options, you must think, can I sell to another PE player? What's missing now is a solution for tail-end assets.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have a fund, 12 assets, the 11th and 12th assets haven't been exited, you're in year 10, you do your plus one, you need to find a solution because you need to liquidate that fund.
Yeah.
In the developed economies, they have their tail-end funds are a thing.
Yeah.
So those sort of products are helpful. We're seeing private credit coming. We're seeing MES. Again, I'm repeating myself, but we're seeing these products coming. Even on private equity, we need to see a few more products come. And this is the role of DFIs. Huh? They need to always remember their role is to promote. They forget sometimes the D in development. So, you know, I think they've done a good job. Credit to them. I'm not criticizing them. But I'm saying they should push us.
Push the envelope.
Exactly.
Maybe that's something that you can push next week. And we're having discussions, right?
At the conference.
At the conference.
Absolutely.
Lillian, for you, as you've been in the industry now and with the investments that you've made so far.
Yeah, I've been in the industry for about 15 years. I'm not a dinosaur like George there.
I'm part of, somebody said to me that George, I said I'm part of the assets. They said, no, you're part of the fixed assets.
Fixed assets.
You're in the balance sheet, you'll see, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But literally, you know, the problem is that you don't look it. And that's the thing.
Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, I've been in the industry for about 15 years. I remember when I started, there wasn't even a big talks about ESG, corporate social. Mm-hmm. I remember writing an article in one of my first jobs about corporate social responsibility for development funds.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, I went to unearth it. It's almost 15 years old, one of the first articles. Wow. So that was very
interesting. We'll have to put a link to that article in this podcast. Yeah,
it's fine. But remember, I was writing from like a 20-something-year-old angle.
You were aspirational.
We'll see, Jerry. Yeah. We'll see if you can even publish it. It's fine. And at that point, the instruments were just the straight equity, or just vanilla debt. There weren't all these instruments we're seeing right now, these products that George is talking about. So there's been a lot of development and change. Even the type of people in the room has changed, right? We're seeing a different mix of genders and races. Mm-hmm. But of course, we still need more females. in the decision making tables. But yeah, a lot has changed, and what we are seeing, what we are doing right now as Goodwill, we started about 20 years ago. We started in India with the financial services, and then we got into Africa through West Africa with a fund, and then we got into Sub-Saharan Africa. Mm-hmm. And we are only now just really trying to make an impact, social and financial return, in the specific theses that we've chosen to, because we see that it'll take a bit of time to be able to address those needs.
Yeah.
And so what we're seeing and what we're doing right now is just zooming in and saying, okay, we've decided on financial inclusion. And so with that thesis in mind, how do we then really move the needle in this space? Or if we've decided on agriculture, decided on immobility, and how we see the needle being moved is with the impact and with the returns we see from our companies. For example, if we see the revenue, when we got in, it was at 1 million. And by the time we're looking at year five, it's at 50 million. Then we can really, really clearly see how our capital has been put to work and how our influence has been put to work. And so we see that we still want to continue in that theme, that thread of really zooming in and saying, how are we directly contributing to the companies, then indirectly contributing to the society and the community?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we see things. It's really going back to what I say in terms of providing affordable goods and services to the base of the pyramid, and that we can only see by the performance of our companies.
The companies.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. And even the work that we do, when we are doing the transaction documents, it's important for us to ensure that what we're giving them is fair and that they can actually meet that expectation.
Yes.
So I'm fully aligned. We might not be at the front line, but we're also contributing as lawyers.
It's true.
And you know what? Private was just a vehicle. Venture capital, these are just vehicles.
Mm.
The end game has to be development. It has to be job creation. It has to be impacting people's lives. It has to be building economies. That's what it is. That's what grew the European economies and the American economies. It's private equity.
Yeah.
So we should do the same.
We should do the same. Let's talk about the best deal, the highlight.
I'm not sure about the best deal.
I know you can't choose, right? But highlight.
This is an education deal. There's an insurance deal.
We're not naming them.
There's a banking deal. You know what happens? Let me tell you what is in common with all of these deals. One is... there's an obvious growth in business revenues, income, you know, so being able to employ more people, pay more taxes, etc. Mm-hmm. So that's there and it's obvious. But then also being able to develop and retain and maintain a relationship with the owners of this business. Mm-hmm. So post-investment, you know, being able to get a call from some of these very established icons of industry, pick up the phone and call you and say, can you spare 5 minutes for me? I need to speak to you. I need to consult with you. That for me is a big text. So that relationship stays on with the owners of the business, with the management teams. That for me is powerful because it goes...
Yeah, beyond just the transaction.
Exactly. When I think of good deals, I mean, I could give you names, but honestly, when I start to see what thread runs across, it's all of those. Mm-hmm. And that's why they know that they can pick up the phone, they can call me at 11 p.m., they can send me a message at 7 a.m., they know I'll be there for them. They can ask me for a meeting. On Sunday, I was meeting some of our fellow shareholders in one of the business. They said, you know, we have a problem, George. We're going to speak to you. And I said, okay, maybe after Mass, I'll come and see you. And I did that. I went and I saw them. And I listened to them for a couple of hours, and we came up with a solution. But that's what it is. That's what tells me a deal is a success. When people see the value
added,
asking for it. There will be some tough moments, no doubt about it, any relationship. But you have to be able to work your way through that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Lillian,
highlight? Yeah, highlight. I have two deals. I have a big one and a small one.
Okay.
And my big one is, first, I'm big on converting waste into power. I think that there's a lot of waste in Africa. And if we can find a way to just channel it all in one place and put power plants there, like, we could definitely make... use of that waste.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one of my best deal, or rather one of my many good deals, just so in case anyone's listening, they're like, what? Mine didn't make the cut. is a biomass, a 5 megawatt power plant biomass project in Western Cape, in Georgetown. And we were converting the fuel stock there was just to waste from offcuts from trees, like branches and so on and so forth, the waste, and then converting it into energy and providing energy to the community. So that for me was such a game changer, because now I could clearly see, okay, these people are going to have access to energy in a time when the country is struggling to have energy from the main grid. Mm. And this particular project, when it's complete, it's going to provide that energy. And this is how I have contributed as part of the people who are part of the consortium. Yeah. So that was a really good deal for me. It was direct impact that I could see. The second one is a very small deal. That one was a megawatt, so it was big money. Mm-hmm. This one was a very small deal. It was a 250,000 ticket. Well, some people be like, what? That's small.
That's a lot. That's a lot of people, yeah. But yeah, compared to African, but
I know, dollars is dollars, yeah. And she was looking for, it was a lady who had a small baking entrepreneurial business, and she was looking to employ about 15 people. She had only 3 at that time, and she needed capital to be able to buy the machine so they can stop doing things manually. And I was part of that. I did it as a consultant, and I prepared her financial model for her. I got her investor ready. I helped her with a deck and so on and so forth. It was a time when I was just switching jobs. And for me to be able to see how happy she was when I got free cake. Mm. But that's a story for another day. But just to be able to see her now, because I went there recently, still running with amazing. Even a bigger team with more investors coming on board. For me, that was just direct. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Amazing. And I think some people forget within the numbers and the transactions and the deals, and they forget the actual impact. And that is exactly what you're talking about. Something that you can actually see tangibly. Thank you so much, George and Lilia. I think you've just been brilliant guests. I haven't gotten to delve deeper into yourselves, but we're going to do that now. So people coming into the industry, young people who want to get into investment banking, what advice do you have for them in terms of strategy, getting in, making an impact in that space? What would you say?
Private equity is still a nascent industry in Africa. A lot of opportunities. And opportunities aren't just coming to work for a private equity firm. So it doesn't just mean you just have to come and work for an African Invest. That's one way. But you could come in and work at the investor level, LP level. You could come in through a transaction advisor, the guys who, if you like, structure the deals, help identify deals. That's another avenue. You could work for a company, a portfolio company. So you could be the operations. Mm. You could work as a research person, research firm. So there are very many ways to put your tentacles into the industry. If you really want to get there, you can get there. Another way to do it is get to know who the players are. A lot of today, the private equity is more open than it was in the past. A lot of networking, mentorship opportunities available. So find your way, get to Jerry knows Lillian, you'll get somebody who knows Lillian, you're going to get to Lillian. So leverage on those networks. Networking is very important in our industry. So I would advise them, don't be blinkered, be open-minded. Have the technical skills, because you've got to bring something to the party. Three, it takes a lot of discipline and hard work. They're not shortcuts. It's not, if you're looking for quick money, this is not it. This is not the industry. Uh-huh. So, those are the advice. That's the advice I'd give.
Uh-huh. Lilia?
Yeah, I would say once you've gotten through the door, the what George is saying, get through and Jerry, once you've gotten through the door, learn what you're doing. Learn the basics and learn them well. Know the fundamentals of whatever it is you've decided to do. If it's transaction advisory, if it's, learn it and learn it well and be able to do it well. And because you often find people who are very strong on form, very weak on substance. Mm. And what you want to do when you're in your early stage is become strong on substance, because form comes as you become more senior.
Yeah, right? We say that to lawyers, young lawyers all the time. Substance.
Just know your stuff. Know how to do a financial model, clean and out. Clean one, know how to write a good report. Just get to the to the work, do the work, and be patient.
And be patient,
excellent. Discipline.
Diligence. Waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Not necessarily. Some people are not early birds. I always say I'm not a very useful citizen in the afternoon.
Are you there?
No, I'm tired. Lazy, my mind gets lazy.
Okay.
In the morning, it's really active.
Yeah. We're going to do a quick fire round. Yeah, quick questions that you can answer in, one word or more, okay? Beach holiday, city holiday?
Beach.
City.
Favorite place in the city?
Johannesburg.
London.
Okay, well, London.
Can we have two? I have Johannesburg London.
And London?
Yes.
Okay, so we're not even aligned. Favorite place to visit, which is not the same as the city?
Okay. London.
Okay.
National parks.
National parks, as in, okay, right. In at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm assuming. Yeah. Apple, orange.
Orange.
Wait, Jerry, I have an answer for the previous.
Okay, go ahead.
Favorite place to visit is a restaurant. A good
restaurant. Actually, yeah. It is a restaurant. Because they're restaurant. Actually knowing you, it was a restaurant.
Good restaurant. Good food.
Yeah. Apple or orange?
Apple.
Pizza topping of choice?
Mushrooms.
Black olives.
Okay. Favorite drink?
Whiskey.
Which one?
any single malt, really good single malt.
Single malt?
Rooibos tea.
Okay, very good. Very vanilla answer, as you'd expect from Lillian. Guys, thank you so much for joining me today. I think we've learned a lot. We've talked a lot about the industry and the space. It is a specialist area, it's a specialist topic, and I've been honored to have the specialist in this area. So thank you very much, George.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having
brilliant guests. Thank you. You guys, see you next month.
Cheers.
Cheers.